Welcome to Highways and Byways for September 2005. Here's your host and Highway Minister, Wyatt Timmons.
Well, greetings in Jesus. You know, this is volume number 21 of this monthly production, and I'm just as excited about this one as I was the very first month. In January of 2004, we launched Highways and Byways, and I was apprehensive the first month or two, not knowing how our approach to church out of the box would be received. But I was always excited. Now the apprehension is over and the excitement remains. Every month we continue to receive positive input from new listeners who have picked up their first Highways and Byways, and regular listeners who like particular segments and leave an encouraging word on our voicemail line. And we continue to receive requests for Highways and Byways subscriptions. This always encourages me to keep plugging away. So that's what I've done for September. Lots of excellent music from our independent Christian artists. You're not going to hear these folks on the radio unless they get picked up by a major label. In the meantime, they are indie artists, and this is an outlet for them as they share their music with us. Now we'll hear from Ken Ham and the folks over at Answers in Genesis as we continue to dispel the myths of evolution. We'll listen to the gospel comedy of Isaac Airfreight, Prime Example, and Lifeline Productions. In between all of these things, I have a few new end time reports prepared to stir up your spirit and help you become a little more aware of some of the things that can line up with biblical warnings concerning end time matters. We'll put the spotlight on a featured artist for the month and run two in a row for you to enjoy as you travel down the highways and byways of this great country of ours. And if you'd like to know how to get Highways and Byways sent to your address each month, I'll take a little time to explain how that works later on. Well, that's an overview about what's coming up this month, and I don't see any reason to keep on talking when we could be listening to the first song for the month. Welcome again to Highways and Byways, my friend. I hope you enjoy what we've prepared for you this month. This first song is by an artist named John Consalvo. He brings a song that talks about things we can all feel from time to time as we work out our salvation with fear and trembling, as the Word advises us to do. The song is called I Feel.
Belong. They look at me like I'm strange, like I've done something wrong. I feel, 'cause I find so much joy in knowing my Savior is a king, not a boy. But sometimes I feel like I've never been or wanted. I feel like I've never believed, and I feel like I've never been true, and I feel like you do. That I am surrounded with each tear that I cry. I feel that I'll miss you more today than I will tomorrow or did yesterday. But sometimes I feel like I've never been or wanted. I feel like I've never believed, and I feel like I've never been true, and I feel like you do now. I feel, yeah. sometimes it's so hard to keep moving forward. When temptation's at hand, and she stands right before me, I've just gotta make my stand. Help me, Lord, make my stand when I feel like I've never been wanted. I feel like I've never believed, and I feel like I've never been true, and I feel like we all do.
Are you new here in heaven?
Yeah, I just arrived.
So what did you do to get into heaven?
Well, I don't know. I found a wallet once with $1,000 in it and returned it all to the owner.
Ever think what it would be like if we got to heaven by being good?
Is that all?
Well, what did you do to get in?
I put my boy through college by unselfishly working every weekend for 10 years making bean dip to sell at the flea market.
Wow.
That's nothing. I invented the cure for placebositis, which saved the lives of thousands of people who didn't even know they were sick.
Ooh.
Wait a minute. I single-handedly took on 12 gang members to protect a little old lady.
Wow. When did you do that?
About a minute ago.
The Bible makes it clear that heaven is a gift from God to those who trust Him. It's not something we earn or deserve. Heaven won't be filled with proud or boastful people.
You know, I never thought heaven would be so hot.
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
We always spend a few minutes hearing from Ken Ham and the folks over at Answers in Genesis. And this month, we not only have a short thought from Ken on euthanasia, we also have a very well-done short mini-drama to share that speaks about death and the difference between the part we play and God's part in all of it.
Hey, Grandpa, I think I'm getting the hang of this.
You sure are. You know, I taught your father how to fish on this lake. He was about your age, too.
I miss him a lot, Grandpa.
I do too.
Why did God take him away from us?
Well, I used to ask that same question until I realized God's not responsible for death. We are, because of Adam's sin in the garden. That's why there's death and suffering in the world, Nick. And it's why your father died. Only God knows why he decided to take your dad when he did, but he asked Jesus to be his savior when he was about your age, just like you did. So we'll see him again in heaven. That's where I find my comfort, Nick.
Thanks, Grandpa.
I love you, kiddo.
Grandparents have a very important role in teaching their grandchildren about God and biblical truths. Seize every opportunity to share with them what God has taught you through the years. A message from Answers in Genesis at AnswersRadio.com.
Put to death because they needed a bed.
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the free booklet, Why Is There Death and Suffering? Well, Ken, are you claiming that someone was deliberately killed in a hospital simply because a bed was needed?
Mark, that's exactly what I'm saying. You see, a Dutch study about euthanasia found that in a single year, there were more than 2,700 euthanasia deaths. Now, these were people who were deliberately killed by a doctor. And you know what? Half were not even given a choice. You see, one elderly lady didn't even want to be admitted to hospital because she thought the doctors would put her down. Now, her own doctor assured her he wouldn't do that, and so she went. But while he was away, someone else killed her because they needed her bed for another patient. You know, there's no doubt that euthanasia, or patient killing, is one of the most critical issues ever to face society, and it's a logical outcome of years of intense indoctrination and evolution. You see, the more people believe we're just evolved animals, then who decides right or wrong? If we're just animals, then killing a human, well, it's no different than putting down a dog or a cat. You see, from an evolutionary survival of the fittest perspective, it makes sense to rid the world of the old or the sick. Christians need to stand against this evil of evolution and teach that all humans are special, made in the image of God.
We're often asked, if there is a loving God, why is there so much death and suffering in this world? Ken Ham tackles that tough question in a free booklet available through our website, AnswersRadio.com. That's AnswersRadio.com.
Belong here. I'm a stranger to this place. I do not speak the language. I don't know a single face. My life's a constant journey. Search for truth. I washed in from the ocean, the stone that finally moved. And you say, and you've gone too far, but it's not too late. Take my hand, don't be afraid. Look around. You're not alone. Come with me. We're going home. I've been down every highway, and every mile's the same. Different cities, and they don't even know my name. But here I'm just a specter, a shadow in the crowd. I push through all the madness, and you call my name out loud. But it's not too late. Take my hand. Don't be afraid. Look around. You're not alone. Come with me. We're going
now, an end times update.
Our end time potpourri report is going to cover a range of news tidbits. Some of these items have a clear and significant connection with end time matters. And while I have my own ideas about some of the other ones, they're to be sorted out for yourself. First up, something I would put in a mad scientist bracket. Scientists have created eerie zombie dogs, bringing dogs back to life after several hours of clinical death in attempts to develop suspended animation for humans. United States scientists have succeeded in reviving the dogs after 3 hours of clinical death. This paves the way for trials on humans. Pittsburgh's Safar Center for Resuscitation Research has developed a technique in which the subject's veins are drained of blood and filled with ice-cold salt solution. Well, the animals are considered scientifically dead as they stop breathing and have no heartbeat or brain activity. But 3 hours later, their blood is replaced and these zombie dogs are brought back to life with an electric shock. Plans to test the technique on humans should be realized within a year, according to the Safar Center. Although the animals are clinically dead, their tissues and organs are perfectly preserved. Damaged blood vessels and tissues can then be repaired via surgery. Tests show that they're perfectly normal with no brain damage. Well, that's what they say. You know what? I'm not so reassured by this. Something tells me that the human brain is a bit more complex than that of a dog. And exactly how do they know that these dogs haven't lost something? They're using clinical dogs who don't have the same opportunity to stimulate their memory and interaction with much more than their food dish and a cage in a clinic. What's to forget? When they are revived, they don't need a memory to go to a food dish and eat. It's a natural instinct. And then there's this matter of no eternal soul at stake. You know, I think I'll pass on the saltwater slushy treatment, but thanks just the same. Out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, we get a report about a local cat who's been diagnosed with plague. It's the fourth in southern Wyoming this year. Public health officials have warned that people should take precautions to protect their pets and themselves. Getting four of them in southern Wyoming in a short period of time is unusual, says Ken Gage of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Fort Collins, Colorado. He said, "It's not a cause for panic or anything, but it is cause for some concern." Where have I heard this line before? Well, in many parts of the West, plague is widespread in fleas infesting rodent populations. The disease can jump to other animals and humans if they come into contact with infected fleas. Researchers speculate that the infected cats probably caught or ate infected rodents. Now, human cases remain extremely rare. A Southwest Colorado woman who caught plague from infected fleas is the region's only human case this year. And Wyoming has had just 5 human cases since 1978. But state health officials also point out that they hadn't recorded any feline cases in more than 20 years until now. One state health official said, "I think this is just going to be the tip of the iceberg. And what really concerns me is these cases with cats right now really increase the risk of human exposure." Now, that's because handling infected animals is much riskier than simply being exposed to infected fleas. In those 5 recorded human cases, each had handled an infected animal. Now, he went on to say that an infected cat might bring infected fleas into a home. That might also infect people by biting, scratching, or coughing. "That's very, very dangerous," he said, "because the disease progresses very rapidly in that situation. So if a cat coughs, I could catch the plague." Well, we'll have to keep our eye on this one and hope that folks train their cats to cover their mouths when they cough.
Just don't let it happen again.
Here's something you don't hear every day. From the website theworldsflag.com, there's an announcement of a flag to represent the entire world. They call it a seal of permanence. Here's a quote from their mission statement. "We are convinced that the time has come to bestow this seal of permanence, a universal concept that unites people everywhere under one shared banner. A flag of hope and power that supports the rights of people everywhere towards a common goal, one of total peace and security." Well, while many will pay little to no attention to this whole concept that they've put forth, I found it quite interesting that there are 8 stars, 4 on each side of a symbol of the world, and that these stars represent the 8 continents of the world. You know, this lines up very much with what some feel will be the ultimate division of world regions under the central rule of the Antichrist's one-world system. That's too early to say whether this will be the adopted flag of the New World Order, of course. And I suspect that many different people will play an unsuspecting part in all of this, and other components that will ultimately fuse together the big picture of the movement as a whole. Speaking of people playing unsuspecting roles in the big picture, from Delray Beach, Florida, Verichip Corporation, a subsidiary of Applied Digital Solutions, recently announced that Tommy Thompson, former Health and Human Services Secretary and former governor of Wisconsin, was appointed to the company's board of directors. With nearly 40 years of his career devoted to public service, Secretary Thompson is recognized as a dedicated advocate for health and welfare of all Americans. In his role as a member of the board, Secretary Thompson is expected to help the company accelerate adoption of the VeriChip for healthcare and security applications. Here's a quote from Scott Silverman, chairman and CEO of Applied Digital. "We are pleased that we have been able to attract such a highly respected member of the healthcare community. An important part of our strategy has been to attract key thought and opinion leaders, and Secretary Thompson has played an influential role in shaping this country's healthcare policies. We look forward to him assisting the company to make the VeriChip an important part of the healthcare landscape." Well, I've said it before, my friends. These people at VeriChip and Applied Digital Solutions are as serious as sin about being the main producer and distributor of computer-type tracking devices. They're going to find ways to make the concept of receiving some type of device in, or better yet, on the body of every person on this planet before they're done. Personally, I look for the day when they develop a type of surface-applied chip that will go past the current implantable chip that they've been injecting under the skin. As more and more prominent people continue to endorse and become involved with this whole push for chipping technology, the easier it will be to introduce it into more and more segments of society until those who refuse to be involved are in the minority.
Now's the time for stepping out of place. Get up on your feet and give account of your faith. Pray to God that He'll shine His mercy light upon you. What I see can make me stop and stare, but who am I to judge you the color of your hair? Surely y'all are feeling much the same way as I do. We gotta keep this world together. Gotta keep it moving straight. Love like the meat forever, so the people can relate. If you're rolling to your left, don't forget them on your right. Trust and forgive each other. Something
make her fade away. Is it difficult to stop the show where that you care? You know that I've got children, I'm so beautiful. Yeah, surely he's a guideline to save us all. Maybe we can be the visions of a private man's dream. Oh yeah, we gotta keep this way.
Hey folks, just a reminder, if you have a prayer request for a loved one or a personal need, you can always pick up a phone and call into our 24-hour voicemail line. There, you can leave your heart's concern and we'll be faithful to take your prayer request to the throne of God in a prayer of faith that seeks God's perfect wisdom and remedy. That toll-free number is on the front of this CD if you need it. Here's a great skit from the gospel comedy team of John and Fred, otherwise known as Prime Example. This episode is called The Man with the Shellfish Heart.
Sometimes people get into trouble. Sometimes they have a friend or loved one looking for them. And sometimes they're just lost. When somebody needs to be found, that's where I come in. My name is Wrigley. I'm a private detective. It was a steamy Saturday night in our southern coastal city, and I was standing in front of the seediest dive in town. A seafood place called the Raw Bar and Grill. But I wasn't afraid, because greater is he that is in me than he that is in the bar. So, with my chin out, my fedora cocked with a hair trigger, and a fresh stick of spearmint in my kisser, I went in. The place was filled with human refuse, the waste of a user society. With eyes like two steel wool pads, I scoured the place thoroughly. I was looking for a guy named Pittman. First name, Stu. Finally, through the dimly lit haze of smoke, I saw a likely suspect. He was sitting alone, staring a bottle of root beer into submission.
Your name, Stu?
Who wants to know?
The name's Wrigley, private detective.
I ain't done nothing wrong.
Didn't say you had. Just got a couple of questions to ask you.
Get lost, gumshoe.
Been lost. Didn't like it. Now, you're gonna answer me? Or am I gonna have to get tough?
Yeah, my name's Stu. What's it to you?
Been looking for you. Your garage has been closed for weeks and your phone's disconnected. You hang out here a lot, Stu?
Mostly. Only folks around here call me Oyster.
Oyster?
Yeah, Oyster.
Oyster Stu. According to my notes, Oyster, I think I might have made a mistake. The guy I'm looking for goes by the nickname of...
And you know why they call me Oyster? Because I like to be left alone.
Well, then, I'll leave you alone and look somewhere...
I live a solitary life, just like an oyster, and I like it that way.
Well, I'll...
And, like an oyster, I have a hard, crusty shell. A shell to keep the world away, and to keep me away from the world. And I don't want to be bothered by anyone, and I don't need a friend.
Okay, I'm hidden.
But, like an oyster, hidden inside is a soft, vulnerable creature. A sensitive part, tender and gentle.
All right, I'll leave you...
But... Like an oyster, I'm also slimy inside. Slimy and disgusting to look at in broad daylight. Too low to kick and too wet to step on. So I keep my shell closed and lie at the bottom of life's polluted riverbed in the filthy mud and rusty tin cans and worn out old tires.
Okay, catch you.
But deep inside that crusty exterior, hidden even deeper.
I think this guy wants to talk.
Inside the slimy insides, there lies a pearl. And you know what's inside that pearl, Gumshoe? A grain of sand. An irritating, painful piece of grit that gets inside your shell between your bivalve and your siphon, rubbing you raw. And you can't get it out, no matter how much pain it causes. You know what my pain was, Wrigley? A memory. Memory of a woman. It ate away at my heart until I wrapped it in beautiful memories of the good time we had. And it didn't hurt so bad anymore. You know what pain is, Wrigley?
Yeah, because you're squeezing the dickens out of my shoulder.
Women.
Man, what a grip.
Can't live with them, can't live without them. And this dame, she was something special. Her name was Pearl. I've never found any woman that I had so much in common with. We both loved changing our engine oil on the weekend and running barefoot through the cow pasture. We both loved shooting squirrels as they walked over the telephone lines across the highway and watching them hit the road and get flattened by 18-wheelers. We loved picking our toes on the front porch as the sun went down and then watching our tapes of our favorite TV commercials. I remember those summer days spent looking for snails in the garden, then surrounding them with salt and betting on which ones would melt first as they tried to get away. And we both loved to talk. You may not believe this, Wrigley, but there was a time I talked a lot.
I never would have known.
We would stay up till dawn, talking. We never listened to each other. We just talked at the same time. But it was like paradise, Adam and Eve in the garden. Except Pearl's a lot hairier than Eve, and she was bigger. And she hated apples because they gave her gas. But, like the Garden of Eden, it couldn't last because there was just one little problem. We got to where we couldn't stand each other.
I can't imagine why.
I remember how it ended. It was last Valentine's Day. I forgot all about it and went fishing instead. She says she wanted somebody more romantic. She gave me back my issues field and stream, and I gave her back her can of Fix-A-Flat and 40-piece socket set. She left me one thing to remember her by. This bottle opener with a mother-of-pearl handle. Now every time I pop the top of a cold one, I'm reminded of Pearl's mother, and it helps make it easier. That was one hateful woman. Looking back, I figured out what went wrong. We were too much alike. We both saw too much of ourselves in the other, and we didn't like what we saw. But you just can't get away from yourself, and I've been making myself miserable ever since.
Yeah, I'm ready to hurl.
What was that?
I said, whatever happened to Pearl?
Well, I heard that she got religion and opened up a combination homeless shelter and 24-hour car wash. She gives people a place to stay and food in return for their work at her car wash. Plus, they get to take a shower and clean their clothes while they work. Not too bad, huh?
Sounds like you could take a cue from Pearl.
Nah, there ain't room in my shell for God. I like it just the way I am. So you go back to whoever sent you, by gum, and you tell them the oyster stew don't want to be found. Nobody knows my business, and nobody's ever gonna shuck and jive this oyster. I just want to be left alone. My heart ain't just broke. It's smashed and stomped on, and Valentine's Day is just another reminder of why it's better to just clam up and forget about love. Ain't nothing to it. So what'd you want to know?
I've heard more than enough already. Wrong stew. Sorry to bother you.
Don't sweat it, gummy bear.
Just one more thing, oyster. There's somebody out there that sees you as a tasty morsel, and one day you're going to be steamed open and swallowed whole into the mouth of hell. I'd advise you to find the pearl of great price that the Bible talks about and hide that away inside. Then you'll be in the right harvest when the nets are drawn in.
What are you, a detective or a preacher?
I'm a fisher of men. Here's my card if you ever want to open up and talk about it.
I got nothing to say. I just want to be left alone. So go on, get out of here.
See you around, Stu. I left Oyster to stew in his own juices. The Stu I was looking for was the heir of $1 million estate. But there was no need to tell Oyster that. It would have only depressed him. The Stu I needed to find was nicknamed Beef. And I knew one thing. I sure wasn't looking forward to hearing his story.
That's right. Just get out of here. Just walk out that door and forget about me. That's it. Keep going. Who needs you? I don't need nobody. Just walk out, like everybody else in my life. Just take a hike and lose old Oyster Stu, the loser. Nobody wants a loser for a friend.
Hey, Stu.
You still here?
Yeah, well, I forgot something.
What's that?
What it's like to need a friend. And how to be one.
Lukewarm.
You're right. I have been.
I meant the root beer.
Oh. Well, anyway, I'm sorry. Look, I'm going to a men's Bible study tonight. The topic is going to be God's love, tougher than nails. How about joining me, Stu?
Well, I don't know.
Afterwards, the guys are coming over to my place for some food and fellowship. How about it?
Well, I could use a little of both, I suppose. Bottle of root beer ain't a very good listener. Sure, why not? It's about time I came out of my shell anyway. Gets kind of lonely in there.
Come on, I'll give you a lift.
Buddy, you already have. Hey, Bull, I'm out of here. You know, those things are bad for you.
Yeah, I know. Started chewing them a long time ago and got in the habit. But I'm cutting back, down to a pack a day. By the way, is the food any good in here?
I don't think so. Gives me heartburn. I just came here to be more miserable.
As we left the Raw Bar and Grill, I realized that Stu had taught me a valuable lesson. He wasn't the one with the clammed up heart. I had been. Sometimes we need to do more than offer well-intentioned advice or even biblical quotes. Sometimes what the person needs first is an open ear, a heart willing to sympathize, and a shoulder willing to share the burden. It's easier to share the Word of God if we've first shown the love of God. Well, that's my story. There's a lot of stories in the big city, and I had a feeling I was going to be hearing more of them. Except next time, I wouldn't mind quite so much. After all, the Lord took time to listen to me, and I'm sure glad He did.
Well, coming up next is something that we haven't done for a few months. We're going to spend a little time with Rob Lacey and his very cool approach to putting the Bible into everyday, street-level understanding. As a matter of fact, his work is called The Word on the Street. Rob is an Englishman, so some of the words that you're going to hear will make you think a moment or two. But that's actually quite good in the long run. You'll figure out the American equivalents as you get used to his method of storytelling. It won't quite make you bilingual, but it will expand your vocabulary a bit. Now, in past volumes of Highways and Byways, we've listened to Rob's work in a series format, going from Israel's first king, King Saul, and then on to David as a boy, and on through to David as a king, and so forth. Well, we jump way ahead at this point and drop in on Jesus as he was dealing with the scribes and the Pharisees, that is, the religious leaders of that day. One of their big problems with Jesus was that he did not follow their religious pattern of what a good believer ought to do and say according to the strict do's and don'ts that they told the common working man to obey, while they themselves were quite the hypocrites in many of these same points. Well, let's listen in now on a few question and answer times between Jesus and those religious leaders.
One time, he's at HQ helping people understand God stuff when a posse of bounty hunters dressed up as head God reps and religious law enforcers turn up. They ask him, "Who's your sponsor? Who's backing you up here?" Jesus steps calmly over their tripwire and answers with a question. Where did the backing for John Baptizer come from? Was it a spiritual thing or a human thing? They were done. Answer A, spiritual, and he'd say, "Why didn't you rate him then?" Answer B, human, and the plebs would chuck rocks at them for slagging off their hero martyr courier. They mumble, "Not sure." Jesus says, "You've not answered my question. I'll pass on yours." Luke 20:9-19. Jesus turns back to the people he'd been chatting to and starts a story about an absentee landlord of a wine-growing setup. He sends a series of staff to collect the rent owed, but each time the workers beat them up and send them packing. After the third comes back, black-eyed and limping, the landlord decides to send his son. Maybe they'll show him more respect. He arrives, and the workers think, "He's the heir. We get rid of him, we get the dosh." So they kill him. The religious law enforcers and head God reps are frantically flicking through the law books. They know this last story was aimed at them. They also know there has to be a huge swing in public opinion. Right now, from tabloid to broadsheet readers, people love him. But they've got a new plan. They send a delegation of some of their top debaters with some of King Herod's men to quiz him. Should Jews pay taxes to Caesar or not? Jesus susses their motives and says, "You two-faced con artists. Your trick questions aren't exactly subtle. Show me the coin you were thinking of giving to Caesar." They fumble around, pass him a coin. He looks at it and asks, "Whose picture's this on the back?" They answer, "Caesar's." "Well, give Caesar what is his and God what is his." Silenced, they slope off. Matthew 22:34-40. A different department take their turn trying to catch him out. Some hypothetical question about some small print in the rule books. Jesus proves they don't know the book, not as well as he does. The crowds love it. Now it's the turn of the top dogs themselves to ask questions. "Of all the 613 rules, which would you say is the most important?" Jesus answers straight. "Love awesome God with everything you've got, your emotions, your will, your thoughts. This is the number one top priority, absolute must, the big one. The number two second absolute must is love people around you as you love yourself." 1,000 column inches of writing by Moses and the couriers boiled down to these two rules. Jesus turns the tables and asks them a question. They can't answer him. From then on, they back off from quizzing him in public. He's too sharp. He's fended off three sly attacks from different groups of religious bigwigs. Now Jesus goes direct. Just in case the team or the public are in any doubt where he stands on the religious powers that be. "They sit where Moses sat, so make sure you listen and you do what they say. But don't do what they do, because they're two-faced. They weigh people down with shoulds and musts and have-tos, but don't risk breaking a precious nail to help get people standing strong again. He lays into them for performing, doing their religion for the applause of the crowd and celebrity ratings. He's on a roll now. He launches into a series of slappings. You're looking down the barrel of bad news, you religious leaders and law enforcers. Two-faced actors, the lot of you. God opens the door marked heaven on earth. You slam it shut in people's faces. Okay, maybe you're not interested, but how dare you stop others? You're riding for a fall, you top brass, you HQ hypocrites. You travel the world on your company card, bring back your trophy converts, then indoctrinate them into doubling your tally of evil. You're washed up, you religious fraudsters, you phonies, you kidology experts. You give God his 10% to 5 decimal points, but you forget rules exist for fairness, love, loyalty. You use sterilized tweezers to fish out the hair from your soup starter. Then you chomp into your mad cow-diseased steak for the main course. You're down the tubes, you ringers for real religion. You're just HQ window dressing. Like I said before, you scrub the bowls and cups so they're sparkling on the outside, but on the inside you leave the bacteria of greed and selfishness to fester. You're up the creek without a paddle, you backstabbing braggers, you garden path tour guides. You're like marble-paved graves, all suave on the surface, but 6 feet under, decomposing bodies giving off stench. You fakes, you con men, you gazumpers. You put flowers on the graves of the couriers, but you're just like those that came before you, stamping out anyone that threatens the status quo. You've hell to pay, you snakes. You've got a one-way ticket to hell, no stations on the way down. You're the reason God had to send so many couriers. Your great-granddads kept lynching them, bumping them off. Your generation is going to take the heat for all the good blood wasted right from the start. Jerusalem. Your track record makes depressing reading. A list of tortured couriers who died in action. So how come I want to cuddle this place? Look after you like a mother cat curls around her crop of kittens. But you won't have it. You're off, only interested in sharpening your claws. And soon you're trashed, nothing left to recycle. Next time you see me won't be until you've learned your lines. Elevate him who turns up glowing with God's approval. Jesus takes a break, sits down opposite the collection boxes. He watches the loaded wafting their big notes around so everyone can see how much they're giving to God's charity. He doesn't miss the cash-strapped widow who sneaks up and tries to get 2 measly little coins into the box without them clattering around and giving her away. Nudging his team, Jesus points her out and says, "The truth is, this woman's put in more than the rest put together. If we're talking percentages, they give a tiny fraction of their vast disposable income. She gives all of it, 100%. John 12:37-50. By now, most people have seen or heard the reports of the spectacular healings Jesus has pulled off. But still, there are plenty of skeptics. Obviously, the grey suits are mostly anti, but some of the religious elite reckon he's the genuine article. Of course, they can't afford to come out. That'd be professional suicide. They get creative with excuses like, "I've worked hard to get this job, and why should my kid suffer for my beliefs? Best to change the system from within," etc. On the ball as ever, Jesus says, "What about those who accept what I'm saying but can't turn it into a lifestyle choice?" Well, I'm not here to interrogate anyone. I've come to liberate people, not pronounce sentence. God will judge them on the big day, and I'll just give evidence as I saw it. Everything you heard is direct from God. The content, the style, the whole thing. I know if they do as he says, they'll get limitless life. I'm just telling you what Dad says to pass on.
Experience the Bible like never before as performance art with Rob Lacey, communicating the truth of Scripture to a world that desperately needs to hear, but finds it hard to understand. It's The Word on the Street from Zondervan.
Now next month, the October volume of Highways and Byways will be a special indie artist edition. What that means is that most of the regular segments will once again take a month off in order to make room for a focus on something special, much like we did in July. Only this time, it'll mean a lot more music and even an interview with an independent artist or two. We'll try to keep a variety of styles and moods in the overall mix, so hopefully everyone will find a special song or two that brings a good message home to the heart. All right, up next is a new artist to Highways and Byways that will definitely show up next month as well. This fellow's name is Don Hess. He's from Montoursville, Pennsylvania, just down the road from me. Now, I met Don just a few months back and had no idea that he had an album or that he was an indie artist. What a delight to find a copy of his CD in my mail when I came in off the road this week and started to finish up Highways and Byways for this month. The song that I've picked out for his debut is a kind of tongue-in-cheek or a real spirit check kind of song. The song is called Soul Sludge. I think you're going to like this.
Take the garbage out. I'm filling up my life with soul sludge. Welcome to my party. Admission definitely free. Before I do dare let you in, promise to pity me. Things didn't quite go my way. I didn't get what's mine. Before I'm feeling okay, I'll mule and puke and whine. I'm butting on a pout, throwing up a great big grudge. I got no time to take the garbage out. I'm filling up my life with soul sludge. Stick my lower lip out. Make my face a frown. My guts turn into sauerkraut. And the worms go round and round. Ooh, I'm feeling mean and funky. Looking black and blue. Don't tell me, get over it. I got more important things to do. Like putting on a pout, growing up a great big grudge. Got no time to take the garbage out. I'm filling up my life with soul sludge. There's nothing I like better than to play my pouting song. And me, myself, and lonely I, they like to sing along to. Misery sure loves company. Won't you join in with me? Singing the same song since 1963. I'm putting on a pout, growing up a great big grudge. It's too late to take the garbage out. I'm filling up my life with soul sludge. I said I'm filling up my life with soul sludge. I'm digging in my heels. I won't. No, I won't budge.
Disease and pestilence updates generally find their way into our End Time Potpourri segment, since the updates are normally rather brief on this kind of topic. This time around, disease and pestilence gets an End Time report all its own. From the worldwide news agency, AFP, comes two separate items on the avian bird flu. And the World Health Organization is close to setting up a global stockpile of anti-flu drugs. Now, this may not seem like anything worth worrying about until you see what kind of flu they're concerned about. From Geneva, the AFP reports on the United Nations Health Agency efforts to build up a global stockpile of at least 1 million doses of an anti-flu drug to tackle a threatened pandemic that the Swiss pharmaceutical firm Roche says could be seen soon. Roche and the World Health Organization have been holding talks on the additional stockpiles of the drug oseltamivir, sold under the brand name Tamiflu. National reserves are being built up by at least 25 countries on three continents. The World Health Organization is also aiming to set up an emergency stock in order to react swiftly to a new pandemic strain of the influenza when it appears. Concern about the imminent appearance of a deadlier and far more infectious type of flu in humans has grown with the spread of the H5N1 strain of bird flu in poultry or wildfowl in Asia and parts of the ex-Soviet Union. Now, that virus has infected humans in recent years, killing 55 people in Asia since it resurfaced in 2003, raising fears that it might mutate. While research into a vaccine is ongoing, antiviral drugs are thought to be an effective way of smothering a pandemic strain when it appears, provided the intervention is swift. Scientists warned in a study published by the British journal Nature that up to 3 million courses of antiviral drugs need to be stockpiled if Southeast Asia wants to stand a chance of containing any human pandemic of this bird flu. Distribution in Thailand needed to start when no more than 40 people were sick, according to the study. The World Health Organization's Director General, Lee Jong-wook, was aiming to start with a global stockpile of 1 million doses that was likely to be expanded. They would like to have it as soon as possible in order to respond if there's an outbreak of pandemic influenza. Currently, the World Health Organization only has a small reserve of a few doses to protect staff who can intervene in emergencies, but they've urged countries to make their own preparations. Roche has received orders for Tamiflu from 25 countries in Asia, Europe, and North America. Listen to this. Britain, France, Finland, Iceland, Ireland, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, New Zealand, and Norway are all aiming to build national stockpiles. My, there we have it. Finally, a clear admission from the World Health Organization that this avian bird flu crossing over to humans in a pandemic or worldwide crisis level is more than just a remote possibility. Remote is what they claimed when we started tracking this flu and giving you updates from time to time in previous volumes of Highways and Byways, well over a year ago. If you've been a subscriber for a while, you know that I've suspected the wording in the conclusions from their reports from the very start. They always gave me the sense that while they were downplaying the possibilities quite remote, there would be a gradual acknowledgement that there was a real problem brewing with this bird flu and the cases of human infections and subsequent deaths. So we've seen them go from, there's really nothing to worry about, to, let's make millions of doses of an antiviral drug and find a vaccine ASAP. Well, this is exactly why we do these end-time updates on everything from wars and rumors of wars, famine, pestilence, increasing wickedness in the world, and persecution, and so on. We need to be able to discern the signs of the times as they approach in stealth fashion. You see, too many folks think that the type of things Jesus warned about as the end of the age approached, before his return, will just appear suddenly. I believe that some of the vials of wrath that God allows his angels to pour out have already been tipped over, and the effect on this world is taking its course on God's timetable, which is rarely the same as ours. In the end, it may all seem like a suddenly for those who doubted and chose to reject discernment now. And for them, panic may be their best reaction. For those who take the warnings of Christ concerning an increase of all these things as we move towards his return, will rest in the knowledge and assurance of God's divine provision in the face of worldly chaos. Next, a follow-up report that adds another dimension to the right now possibilities of what may yet take place with this bird-slash-human hybrid flu and the potential to wreak havoc on the entire world. Listen to this headline. Canadian bank warns avian flu pandemic could cause global economic mayhem. Out of Ottawa, Canada, the AFP posted this report. Canadian financial analysts predicted that an avian flu pandemic would have dire consequences on the global economy. Its impact could be comparable to the Great Depression of the 1930s. In a first-of-its-kind report on the financial impact of a possible pandemic, BMO researchers warned that an outbreak could devastate the airline and hospitality industries, trigger mass foreclosures and bankruptcies, decimate insurance companies, and disrupt food chains as people switch from animal to vegetable diets, all costing hundreds of billions of dollars. Its economic impact could be comparable, at least for a short time, to the Great Depression of the 1930s, said BMO chief economist Sherry Cooper. In the report, which is called An Investor's Guide to Avian Flu, she said it's not meant to be alarmist, since an avian flu pandemic is unlikely to occur anytime soon and would only last a few months. I guess that's why they're producing all these vaccines. Influenza A type H5N1 was first discovered in Tarns in South Africa in 1961. The first known human infections were in Hong Kong in 1997, when 6 of 18 people infected wound up dying. That's about 33%, isn't it? Bird flu has killed 61 people across Asia, 42 of them in Vietnam since late 2003, and it's ravaged poultry stocks in the region as well as in parts of Russia and Kazakhstan. Health experts have warned that the bird flu virus could spark a global pandemic if it develops the ability to spread quickly among humans. There are no vaccines available to curb the spread of this virus in humans, although, as we just learned, some are being developed. Only 9 countries have the capacity to produce vaccines on a commercial scale. Using current manufacturing processes, they're unlikely to be able to deliver enough bird flu vaccines to stop a pandemic. The pandemic would likely start in Asia and spread around the world. Deaths could top more than, listen to this, 50 million. Billions of people would fall sick and billions more would be too afraid to go to work. Affected countries would likely force quarantines and close stock markets. Work absenteeism from deaths and illness would skyrocket. Attendance of sporting events, theme parks and movies would drop if they weren't banned altogether. Patronage of bars and restaurants and hotels would just go down the drain. As more people stayed home, e-commerce might flourish as long as the postal and courier services were maintained. But technology industries that are heavily linked to Taiwan and China would probably suffer supply chain disruptions. In relatively short order, the deceleration of almost all non-essential economic activity would trigger a rampant decline in spending, leading to deflation and massive job losses. You know, it may seem a small consolation here, but I got to thinking. If all of this broke loose, maybe truck drivers would finally receive the kind of respect and appreciation many of the good drivers deserve. Because somewhere, there will still be a dispatcher asking you or me to deliver a load into a metropolitan area full of people. It might even give you a raise. Okay. I've gone overboard with speculation, haven't I? But I'm certain that they'd give us an extra driver appreciation shirt.
Thank you. said he unto them, Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And great earthquakes shall be in divers places, and famines and pestilences, and fearful sights and great signs shall there be from heaven.
Well, this month our indie artists and their songs were David Foraker with Get It Together, Angels Wake with Going Home. Morris Mott brought us Never Enough, and 40 Miles North gave us the song Faithful. And oh yes, Cliff Klein with You Found Me, and the delightful song Soul Sludge by Don Hess. Time is closing in on us here, so I need to do and say what I always do and say at this point, one way or the other. If you like what you have heard on this month's Highways and Byways, then you'll most likely enjoy it every month. If you can get back to the Petro in Milton, PA, and find one there when you pass by again. But those are long odds for the best part, due to the fact that I cannot currently keep enough CDs there for everyone who picks one up each month. So the best play is to contact me through any of the ways on the front of this CD and let me know that you'd like to become a subscriber and be added to the mailing list. Now, there is no official charge. We ask you to consider a $3 per month donation to cover not only your CD, mailed to your address, but your donation will also make you a very real part of this outreach, because every time someone subscribes to Highways and Byways, their monthly donation adds two more free CDs to the number that we can give away for free. We started the kitty at 100 CDs per month in January of 2004. Last month, we gave away 240 CDs in total. So please consider making it 242. Do the math here with me. Your $3 donation would add up to $36 on the year. This is how most everyone contributes, just once a year. So $36 gets you a total of 12 CDs mailed to your address, and 24 more throughout the year that are given away to others. That's $36 for 36 CDs, unless you use some kind of new math. Not a single penny goes to pay anyone. Not a single penny remains in the ministry account very long either, because we simply continue to buy more materials to give away more CDs. We've had a few different calls and emails recently from folks who want to distribute Highways and Byways to other truck stops. So let me take a moment to tell you what needs to take place in order to get that ball rolling. First, you need the permission of the management of the truck stop, if there's no established full-time ministry on site. This is why it works so well for us at the Petro in Milton, PA. Chaplain Chris is there full-time. She's available whenever a driver needs counsel or someone to talk with or pray with. So permission by the established authority is essential. It's also quite biblical to respect authority. Number two, you need to decide how many CDs per month you can commit to sponsoring. Now, we will step out in faith with you and match the number of CDs that you commit to sponsor to a location each month. It's too easy for me to tell you that God will bless you and supply your needs if you give to His work. I need to believe it enough to come alongside of you, and that's what I'm talking about here. We will trust God along with you and meet your level of faith to reach out to others in this ministry. Number three, you must be able to get by the truck stop at least twice a month, without fail. If you cannot guarantee that you or someone faithful, honest, and dependable, all three of those, will monitor and refill the CD display box, then it makes no sense to get started. You must be committed, number four, to pray over the CDs before you distribute them, and believe in advance for the drivers who'll be picking them up and putting them into their CD players. My wife Gail and I pray and believe that everyone who picks up one of these CDs has done so because the Lord wants to get a message to them. We don't assume that everything on the CD is for everyone, but we do believe that there is at least something from the Lord for everyone every month. Well, now time is really nipping at my heels here, and I want to go out this month with two short passages of Scripture, a question, and a simple thought to pass on to you. The first passage is from Jeremiah 29:11. There we read, I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. They are plans for peace and not disaster. Plans to give you a future filled with hope. Now the question is this. Since God already knows what His plans for you are, wouldn't it be a really good idea to find out what those plans are? Oh, so you say, that sounds just fine, preacher, but you make it sound like it's some kind of easy thing to do, to know what God wants me to do. Well, that brings me to the reply, which is the simple thought that I wanted to pass on to you. It's found in the second passage that I have to share. This one is from Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. It says, "Trust in the Lord with all of your heart, and lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths." I want you to know that when you take God at His word, you catch His attention. Yes, you can catch the attention of the Creator of the universe. He's looking for people to show Himself strong in and through. The promise is very real. If you will acknowledge Jesus as not only a convenient Savior to spare your soul from hell, but also as the Lord of your life here on planet Earth, God stands ready to fill you with His plan for your life. You won't have to figure out all the details. You just need to be willing to allow His Holy Spirit to begin the work in you that God designed in you from the very foundations of the earth. So what are those plans? Well, He just told us, "I have plans to guide you into peace and a future filled with hope." I want to tell you, my friend, with all of the misery and disaster, the darkened hope of a future that this world holds for those who try to go it alone, without the love of God and the hope of eternal life through Jesus Christ, this is the best offer that's going to come along, ever. If you've been running from this commitment to Jesus Christ, it's time to be still and know that He is God. If you'd like to talk about your God destiny with someone, contact me. I would be honored to help you get on track with your spiritual journey. And somewhere along the way, you can help me back by keeping me on track. I can't call or write you first. I don't know who you are, but God does. And this may be that moment that you need to respond in faith. And that's up to you.
See? faithful.